This is the Pot of Gold Extra Point, brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast. And brought to you by Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. The Pot of Gold Extra Point Virginia Tech Edition. He's Carter Carls. I'm Tom Noy. We're both from the South Bend Tribune, ND Insiders. And Carter, we start with breaking news today, right now. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
There's an actual football game this week. Notre Dame is playing Virginia Tech. It's not the Michigan hangover. It's not Bashian Book. It's not second-guess Brian Kelly. We're actually going to talk about a football game.
We sure about this?
I hope so, because on the line we have, from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, Virginia Tech beat writer Mike Barber. Mike, what's happening, my man?
Well, I actually thought I was coming on to second-guess Brian Kelly, though, so now I'm confused.
Well, usually we ask readers for questions at the end of the podcast. Give us your questions, your comments, your concerns about Notre Dame football. And as of 10 minutes ago, I think we have two, because people are just questioned out at this point, asking about Ian Book, asking about Phil Dracovic, asking what the heck went wrong in Ann Arbor. Everything they could have asked, they've asked this week. So they're just exhausted with the Michigan thing right now.
And I think that makes sense. But if you're a Virginia Tech fan or a Virginia Tech player or coach, to me, the storyline works the opposite. Mm-hmm. Now you've got this Notre Dame team that's got to be a little bit pissed off, right, about the way they left it last time they were on the field, and a fan base that's all worked up and a coaching staff that's got the, you know, bees in their shorts. And to me, it's the worst case scenario for Virginia Tech. You want to play Notre Dame when they're fat and happy. You want to play Notre Dame when they've just rickrolled somebody by 30. Not this hornet's nest, to me, that Virginia Tech has a potential to walk into now.
It could be a hornet's nest, but honestly, we have no idea what we're going to see from this Notre Dame football team on Saturday. Like, are they going to be pissed, like you said? Are they going to come out and give maybe the effort that they gave in the second half of the Virginia game, where they just got after Bryce Perkins, unleashed the defense, the offense got rolling, and we looked at that and said, wow, they do that against Virginia. Who knows what they're going to do the rest of the way? So, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, and I was there in South Bend for that Virginia game and obviously came away impressed with Notre Dame's defensive front. And the biggest thing to me in that one was the one-on-one athleticism. I mean, it wasn't some crazy design. It wasn't some perfectly timed blitz. Notre Dame's down linemen were just beating Virginia's offensive linemen one-on-one. And when I watch the Virginia Tech team play, when I watch video of this line, I mean, I see the same thing happening. This Virginia Tech offensive line is going to have to play its best game of the year, or to me, this game won't be competitive.
Yeah, Mike, I think that's what made the Michigan game really surprising, was because you saw how the defensive line played against Virginia. They had really started to come on. I believe Kyle Kareem, Julian Aquara combined for 7.5 sacks in 3 games, and then they came out so flat getting pushed around against Michigan. So, you know, you talked about where kind of Notre Dame is at right now, and maybe that's not good for Virginia Tech that they're catching them, you know, angry. But Virginia Tech, they've gone on quite a run themselves, three straight wins, coming off a bye week, made a quarterback change from Ryan Willis to Hendon Hooker. What do you kind of make of where Virginia Tech is at right now? Do you feel like they're a team that's legit enough to win the Coastal Division, or – you feel like just the last few games are just kind of beating up bad teams?
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to be legit to win the Coastal.
True. And that's
good point.
And that's sort of the problem when we talk about any of these teams. To your point, I think Virginia Tech is playing much better. I think the offense looks a little more diverse, a little more multiple since they made the quarterback switch. I think they're absolutely playing with some more confidence. So I'm not here to down them. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of good things going on. But I don't think they're very good. And I've said this from the beginning of the year. This is a Virginia Tech team that is going to have to fight tooth and nail to beat Rhode Island, to beat Old Dominion, to beat Furman, to beat Miami. Any game they win is going to be a fight. They're not good enough that they're going to blow anybody out. They're not good enough that they're going to be even in firm control of games. Now, the thing I'm seeing in the last few weeks is I'm seeing a team that has the confidence that if one or two things go wrong, they keep fighting, and that's valuable. But I still think they're going to be mismatched badly in this particular matchup.
How is this Virginia Tech team different than the one that lost to Notre Dame at Lane Stadium last year, 45-23?
You know, I don't. I guess they're a little older defensively. There's a little more experience. They're getting a little bit more from their pass rush without having the blitz. They are still blitzing a bunch. That's a Bud Foster staple, and Rayshard Ashby from the linebacker spot is a year older and very good on the blitz. But, you know, they're a little more experienced in the secondary. You're seeing a slightly fewer blown coverages, but they're still giving up a lot of big plays. A lot of the questions that were around this team a year ago are still here. Can they run the ball consistently? Well, we haven't seen it consistently. Can they stop giving up big plays defensively? We haven't seen that week in, week out. So in many ways, this is a very similar team to the one that lost at Lane.
Yeah, one of the things that did stand out to me about this defense, already have one more sack than they had all of last year. Last three games, they've had 15 sacks, 22 tackles for a loss. And I know maybe some of that was against poor competition, but do you feel like that's maybe their strategy? You know, they're giving up a lot of yards, giving up points, but maybe being opportunistic will help them generate turnovers or help them get those three and outs, getting off the field third down. Do you feel like that's kind of the game plan against Notre Dame, is to kind of get after Ian Book?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and again, that's a Bud Foster staple from all of his defenses, but particularly this week, you're right that if you can get after Book, you certainly don't want him to get comfortable, right? You certainly don't want him to have his pick and choose here of where he's going to go with the ball, when's he going to run it. You want him to play a little bit on your schedule, and that is going to be a big part of it. And, you know, a big part of Virginia Tech's pass rush has been some young kids who we just didn't know much about. They're starting to come around. And you mentioned kind of the lousy competition, bluntly, and timing-wise, it was great because you had a bunch of kids who had never played college football. When I'm looking at Mario Kendricks, when I'm looking at Norrell Pollard, and some other young guys too, but those two are true freshmen, had never played any college football. And here comes this really soft schedule, and if nothing else, it gets them in some games, and it gets them in some experience getting, you know, hit in the mouth by a college offensive lineman. And, you know, how they'll fare against better competition, I don't know. But I thought defensively they played well in the Miami game, obviously. And I think that that pass rush is coming along. And, you know, in the NFL, they get a preseason schedule, right? They play all those games that don't count. And in some ways, while these games counted, Virginia Tech got a chance to play some of these lesser teams and two 1AA or FCS teams, and it gave some of these young kids a chance to get their feet under them at least.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold Extra Point presented by Zaxby's. Let's take a short break.
We know you like football, so do we. We're TireRack.com, and this is our version of a two-minute drill, except it's only 30 seconds. TireRack.com has an enormous selection of tires. Not sure which ones to buy? Use our tire decision guide to find the right tires for your vehicle and the way you drive. Then get them shipped fast and free on all orders over $50. Shipping is in as little as one day, free. TireRack.com ships to independent, recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Touchdown!
Back on the Pot of Gold, Extra Point, Virginia Tech edition, presented by Zaxby's with Carter Carls. My name is Tom Noy. We're talking Virginia Tech with Mike Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch beat writer, covers the Hokies. You said a lot of the things about last year still prevalent this season. What's different about Justin Fuente? Because there's a lot of questions maybe at the end of the year after they kind of went off the rails after that Notre Dame game, whether or not he was going to be the guy in Blacksburg. Has that kind of maybe been toned down a little bit?
It's toned down a little bit, and you guys know the drill from, you know, being at Notre Dame, where every week I'm sure there's huge reactions and sways and emotion, and you guys deal with that.
But, how about every day?
hour to hour, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, Virginia Tech got absolutely dismantled at home by Duke, and if this was, you know, a democracy and they took a public referendum the next day, Justin Fuente would be doing television somewhere. And I don't think that would have been a good decision. You know, I think the guy's a good coach. I think they're not very good this year. I think they're going to be a lot better next year. I think you're going to have a lot of belly grumbling and people who, at the end of the year, especially if the bowl streak ends, especially if the UVA streak ends, the big rivalry game, especially if losing to UVA ends your bowl streak, you're going to have a lot of people saying, we want change. This is going the wrong direction. 15 million reasons why that's not going to happen in the form of Justin's buyout. And I think they're going to bounce back next year with a pretty good year. But you're absolutely right that fans are irritated. Fans are upset. Fans are spoiled, bluntly. Mm-hmm. I mean, Frank Beamer, you know, how many winning seasons in a row? The idea of a losing season blew people's minds last year. And other college programs deal with that. So I think Justin Fuente, to me, he's the same guy. He's trying to do the same things. I think he knows he has an average football team, and he's a year away from having a pretty good one. And he's just got to stay the course and make it through there.
Mike, did you say $15 million or $50 million on the buyout?
$15 million, okay. Which is still more than Virginia Tech's going to pay. You know, they had kind of cashed in with the whole Buzz Williams basketball deal, but they needed Buzz to stick around for another year or two to fill that arena and get that ticket money revenue-wise.
Uh-oh, we're going to go off the rails here because I'm sitting here currently. Not only am I a hoops guy, I've covered Notre Dame men's basketball for 23 years, but I'm sitting in the same room as a Texas A&M graduate, and he's pumping his fist at the thought of Buzz Williams.
Yeah,
he is good. He's going to do a great job there forever, however long he's there, and he's going to put the beat writers there through absolute heck because he's an interesting one to work with.
Because for as long as Buzz was in Blacksburg, I didn't even know you had a first name because he only referred to you as Barber, right?
He definitely loves to use the last name, and because I cover UVA and Tech, when I was at UVA and he had a game and I wasn't there, oh, he noticed. So, yeah, we had an interesting dynamic, but he is a great basketball coach, and he'll do a great job there.
Yeah, there were a few times where you were on double duty and you weren't at a Tech game, and he'd look around and the first thing he'd say is, "Where's Barber at?"
He is always looking for me. I'm sure he misses me now that he's in College Station.
Mike, I want to also ask a little bit more, you know, details from last year because it seemed to really blow up at some point with the transfers, the locker room. What can you kind of give us some details about how crazy it got last year, and then maybe what changes they made in the off season?
Yeah, it's interesting to me because you see it all the time, right? When there's a coaching change, that first year, there's a lot of transition. There's a lot of guys transferring out and, you know, maybe I don't fit with the new coach. And that didn't happen with Justin Fuente. And I think the reason it didn't happen was that first team was pretty loaded, right? That team ended up winning 10 games, winning the Coastal Division, playing well against Clemson in the ACC title game. So there were a lot of kids who were like, okay, I don't know if I fit. I don't know if this is for me. But I'm going to stick around because this is a pretty good football team. What happened was year three, you really got the year one transition where everybody who was maybe not on board, now they're starting to grumble and talk about it. Maybe I'll leave. And it's happening in year three. And it really knocked the chemistry off the rails. You know, you read, the Sports Illustrated story talking about, you know, guys not wanting to win the final regular season game. Hoping that the year would end so they didn't have to go to a bowl. Crazy stuff. Now, definitely the minority of kids, but that shouldn't be happening at all in your locker room. And, you know, I think it underscored two things. One, that there were chemistry and internal problems with that team. And two, that they didn't have a great, to me, respectfully, I don't think they had a great handle on their own locker room if those things are brewing and you get to that point at the end of the year. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you want to pick up in camp. You want to pick up in week one or week two and put it down, however you have to do it. If it's running kids off, if it's a players-only meeting, whatever it is, something needed to happen a lot earlier than it did. Now, to Justin's credit, and to defend him in this regard, once it all went, in my mind, badly, they recovered. You know, they had this team meeting with the coaches, and they said, hey, tell us what you guys are thinking. Tell us what you guys are feeling. And some guys left, and other guys bought in really hardcore. And I think they're on the right path now. I think they just really let things get away from them for a year or two.
Virginia Tech is coming off a 6 overtime victory over North Carolina, 43-41 on October 19th. Is that maybe a light bulb game for this program? Like, hey, we're not as far off as some people may think.
Yes and no. To me, it's the epitome of if they fight hard and make some plays, they're going to have a chance to win some games because the Coastal Division's not great. The schedule's not great. I think it's encouraging anytime you pull out a victory like that. But, you know, they go back and look at that game and, you know, there's 100 moments that it should have never got to overtime. You go back and watch that game and there's 100 moments that Carolina could have won that game. So to me, it's the story of the year. This team is very flawed. It can do some good things, but it also can get overwhelmed. And it's going to be in most games. Most games, it's not going to be, you know, in a blowout situation. But it's not going to blow anybody out either. And it's just going to be that go-the-distance fight week in, week out. And that's the best, to me, you can hope for if you're a Tech fan.
It's a flawed team. It's a team that gets overwhelmed. In other words, it's got Notre Dame right where it wants them on Saturday.
It's an interesting matchup in that regard because right. As a guy who's outside of South Bend, I say, wow, Notre Dame, they've got to have their hair on fire. They're going to rip to shreds. But on the other side, you say, man, maybe Notre Dame's down a bit. Tech's actually playing with some confidence. And Tech, not a program that's usually in the situation, but Tech is a program right now that people could overlook. They're not a great program. They're not the consistent winner they've been. So in some ways, yeah, maybe that does play to the Hokies' favor.
And it's hard to think that both teams are coming into this matchup on Saturday. They're both 5-2. You'd think by everything that's going on, Virginia Tech is 6-1, and Notre Dame is 3-4.
But guys, I'll tell you, when I go to write an article, and you know this, you drop the record in every article, mm-hmm. I type 5-2, and then I pause, and then I go back and I check my notes because I'm like, are they really 5-2? And I'm talking about how bad they are and how flawed they are and how the program's off the rails. I mean, 5-2, if they continue at this pace, they're going to be right near the top of the Coastal. They'll be right near 8 wins. And is this the tragedy that I feel like I'm always writing and speaking about? But again, early part of the season, very light schedule. I think this team has gotten better, but I still think there's a lot of issues and shortcomings here.
Yeah, and the funny thing about this game for Virginia Tech, really in the game grand scheme of things, like, yeah, they've won a win, but it doesn't really affect anything. Like, it's not like they can't win the Coastal if they lose this game. It's not going to affect them conference-wise. So, I mean, you feel like they're kind of playing with nothing to lose, and, like, what do you feel like is kind of their game plan for Saturday against Notre Dame?
Yeah, in that regard, because the bowl streak is so huge, they have to get to 7 wins this year because they played 2 FCS schools. So I don't think they ever view any game as kind of house money. Now, I will say the attitude of fans and media, we've sort of chalked this one up as a loss since the preseason. So in that regard, if they were able to pull the upset at Notre Dame, now the math for getting bowl eligible works in their favor a lot better. Plus, if you go and beat Notre Dame, I'm going to come back and say, yeah, this is a team that can win the Coastal. This is a team that should beat Georgia Tech. This is a team that could beat Pittsburgh. This is a team that can beat Wake at home. Everything changes of the vision of this team if they go on the road and beat Notre Dame. I have a hard time seeing how that would happen.
Virginia Tech is the last ACC team to beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame Stadium. That happened in 2016. The Hokies twice rallying from 17-point deficits to win that game. How do the Hokies look at visiting Notre Dame? Do they get caught up in the mystique? Is it just another road game? Maybe a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say it's both. I think they have a healthy respect, and I appreciate that. Cause, you know, for me, I'm 40 years old, so Notre Dame being on TV, Notre Dame football, that was such a big deal for me growing up. And sometimes you wonder, like kids today with so many games on Saturday afternoon, like does it still matter? But it matters to their dads, and it matters to their uncles, and it matters to their coaches, and I think it's trickled down, so it matters to the kids. Now, the fact that they won there in such a thrilling game, that's cool and all. There's going to be 2 players who played in that game who play on Saturday. So I don't know that they're carrying a healthy dose of confidence. The mystique stuff, I think the coaches love it. I think the coaches love the opportunity to be at such an historic place. I think the players respect it. But I don't think the past success or failure or history, I don't think any of it plays in because these kids are so young. It's almost in a way the details and the really awesome stuff of Notre Dame culture in some ways is probably lost on them because they're so young.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold Extra Point Virginia Tech Edition presented by Zaxby's. Back on the Pot of Gold Extra Point presented by Zaxby's, spending a few more minutes with Mike Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, talking Virginia Tech, talking Notre Dame. Biggest keys to Saturday's victory or Saturday's defeat? What's the biggest key for Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I look first up at the matchup on the line. I think Virginia Tech's offensive line, as I mentioned earlier, I think they're going to have trouble with that Notre Dame defensive front. if they can hold up there. And by hold up there, hey, it's not all about five guys blocking, you know, four coming at them. If Virginia Tech wants to max protect, if they want to keep a back in, if they want to chip with a tight end, they want to bring a receiver down, whatever it takes, if they can protect Hendon Hooker, he's a mobile quarterback, he can roll out. If they can do some things that they can run their offense without being disruptive, to me, that's the number one key. And then they can't afford any of the eye-openers, right? They can't afford turnovers. They can't afford to give up a big kick return. Anything that gives Notre Dame what we call that hidden yardage, it's just going to tip things the other way and make it almost an impossible task. So those are the two things to me that I'm most looking at.
Mike, before we get your prediction, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask.
Buzz Williams?
Not Buzz Williams. Okay. One of my favorite ever college football pictures, memes, whatever you want to call it, Frank Beamer, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, 0-0, going into overtime, and he's got both of his fists raised to the sky in celebration. So hilarious, given the score's 0-0, that someone could be happy about that. Were you at that game? Do you remember that picture? Like, what's your kind of recollection of that whole experience?
I don't even know where to start. One, it's the screensaver on my work laptop.
So yes.
I know the picture very well. And two, yeah, I was there for all of the amazing offense. And that was the game that I had to awkwardly, after the game, ask the offensive coordinator, Scott Loeffler. And I wasn't sure how to word it because we'd been down this road so many times, but it was such a bad game. And I essentially said, do you think you just got yourself fired with that showing? And to his credit, Scott took the question and kind of said, you know, well, we'll see. It certainly wasn't our best day of work. And I really appreciated that. You know, he wasn't angry at me. He was angry at his offense. But, yeah, that game was wild as a game that ends 0-0 in regulation can be. And you got to remember that was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a missed field goal, maybe a missed extra point. So it was relief that Frank was expressing. And we all got a really good laugh in this North Carolina 6 overtime game, because there was a shot of Mack Brown,
yes,
in a very similar hands up, and it was, you know, something had just gone goofily wrong that was going to allow them to have one more overtime, and that pops up on the screen, and we're like, oh, it's Frank and Wake all over.
Deja vu.
Mike, how is Notre Dame viewed in the Atlantic Coast Conference as, just from a football standpoint, is it either get in or get out, or is it, oh well, now we've got to go play Notre Dame again in this goofy type of arrangement?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the fact that Clemson has been so good and has been at the top of college football has killed some. Notre Dame needs to get in. Notre Dame needs to get in, because you've got a great program. You've got a program now that's got more recent history, but some history to it, and I think that's helped things. People would love Notre Dame to be a full-time member, to be a football member. I think teams still like having them on the schedule. I think the fact that you don't have to go out and find that big-time non-conference game, it's there for you. I think it's awesome. I think programs appreciate the strength of schedule boost. I think they appreciate the ticket sales. I know they appreciate the ticket sales when Notre Dame comes to town. So to me, it's all positive. But yeah, for the long-term health of the program, and I think some would argue for the long-term health of Notre Dame, I think it would make a lot of sense. It's just, why would Notre Dame give up? You guys know this. Why would you give up that TV contract and all that money if you don't have to? I think somebody's going to have to bite the bullet with Notre Dame and say, we're going to let you in, and we're going to find a way that you keep your TV money. And I know from a business standpoint that sounds crazy, but I think that's the only way in the long term it works out.
Okay, from a big picture, whether it's football or men's basketball, where does South Bend rank on the hierarchy for road trips for Mike Barber? Good, bad, indifferent?
I think it's a good one. I'd say this. It's hard to get there because we don't always fly to South Bend, mm-hmm, for budget reasons. So there's a lot of flying to Chicago, flying to Indianapolis, and driving. Now, I have some great friends at Notre Dame who coach another sport there, and so seeing them is high on the list. There's some good restaurants. I think is that where I go to Husk? Is it called Husk? There's one there that I really...
Corn Dance?
Really like. Corn Dance. There we go. There I don't know. Go. Yeah, Husk Corn. You see where my brain's working. I really enjoyed the meals I've had at Corn Dance. That's one I go to. Mike Bray actually recommended Corn Dance to us, and that's one that I hit every time. So I'd say between the excitement of being at Notre Dame, seeing the venue, seeing the campus, add in, you know, some good food, some good people. And then I enjoy when I walk to the media lot and you guys have those townhouses or condos, mm-hmm. and the kids look like they've turned their basement garages, they've turned them to like little man cave bars. That's awesome. And I want to skip a game and sit in one of those and take it in. That to me looks like a great scene.
Well, one more question I got for you, Mike, regarding the ACC network, that is something that Notre Dame fans cannot despise more. I mean,
because they can't get it here.
Yeah, they can't get it. The Duke game, they're thinking, well, I guess we'll just listen to it on the radio kind of thing.
Or buy a newspaper and read about it.
Yeah.
We encourage that. Yeah. We definitely encourage that.
Exactly. Yeah. Mike, is ACC network, are fans just kind of like, oh, cool, it's more coverage for us, or is it just kind of, you know, whatever? Like, how are fans receiving the ACC network?
Guys, I got to tell you, we don't get the ACC network here. Mm-hmm. Comcast, which is the biggest provider in this area. So most fans are angry because they're missing games. It's been really interesting. You know, they just aired, it might have been last night, you know, we were all caught up in the World Series, but they just aired that Unbelievable, the documentary on Virginia's run to the basketball national championship.
Yep.
And a lot of people were excited. And then there was almost this like wall they hit where they remembered, oh, shoot, I can't watch it because I don't get the ACC network. So it's a little ridiculous. And I understand that the business is out of some people's hands, and in Comcast and ACC, they're going to work it out. But it is funny that I think there's an appetite for what they're doing. I do think fans want to watch what they're producing. But right now, at least for the teams I cover, there's a lot of people just ticked off that they can't watch their games.
You can't even imagine what the anger will be. It may be tempered a little bit because now they have two losses. But when they can't watch the Duke game at night next week, our sports department will be flooded with calls. Why can't we get this channel? What channel is it? Because like you, Comcast, one of the biggest providers up here, they do not carry ACC network.
Oh yeah, so. And we get those amazing phone calls. My favorite is when, why is ESPN showing this game and not that game? And I'm like, who do you think you guys just called? Like, even if it was up to me, I wouldn't weigh in. But we don't decide what games are. So it's and I get it, man. If you're a fan, one thing you expect in this day and age, with all of the things being televised, you expect your games to be on TV. And mm-hmm. there's going to be some growing pains. And I don't know that this Comcast deal is going to get done. You know, I think it might be longer than people are realizing before this Comcast deal gets done.
Let's get a prediction for you, Mike.
Prediction time.
Score, thoughts, and maybe your favorite Halloween candy to wrap it all up.
That sounds great. So actually, I'm sitting in the parking lot waiting to go in and buy Halloween candy. So perfect timing. Yeah, always to the last minute, right? But we're getting rain here, so we may be trick-or-treating tomorrow. As far as a prediction, I think Virginia Tech's going to come out and play well. I think they're going to play with a lot of confidence. I think people are going to be really impressed with where this team has gotten in the first half. I think they're going to end up getting overwhelmed. I don't think their pass protection is going to hold up. I don't think they're going to be able to run the football. And I think they are going to give up some of those big game-changing type plays. So I'm looking for a game that's like 17-10 at the half and everybody's feeling good, and that might be it for Virginia Tech for the day, and then we're looking at, you know, 48-17 by the time we're done. I don't think this game will stay competitive for four quarters. I know fans want to see that, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Mike, thanks for your time. Next time you're in South Bend, Corn Dance is on us, my man.
I can't wait. Looking forward to it.
There you go. That's Mike Barber, Richmond Times-Dispatch, Virginia Tech beat writer, talking a little Notre Dame, talking a little Virginia Tech. And now, do we have to go back and talk about Michigan? Where do we go from here? We're almost like the Notre Dame football team. 5-2, 16th in the country. Where do you go from here the last 5 weeks after what we witnessed in rainy, windy, cold, miserable Ann Arbor last weekend? Do we break down what happened against Michigan? Do we break down what has to happen against Virginia? I have no idea.
There are so many layers and ways you can look at it. I mean, you think before the season, 10-2 was about where most people thought they'd be, and that still looks like what they'll probably finish. But after a loss like that, all that is kind of out of the window because
can you have a more disappointing 10-2 team? Like if they go 10-2, that would be great. I mean, third consecutive season that this Notre Dame football team will have won at least 10 games. I don't think that's happened since the early 90s, I want to say, back when Lou Holtz was coaching. So that's an outstanding run. But to go 10-2 the way this program got to 10-2, like that, and whatever happens the last 5 weeks of the season, that's just not going to wipe clean what we saw in Ann Arbor. It's just or what we didn't see in Ann Arbor with, look, Michigan, Notre Dame, I get it, rivalry game, big stage, big moment. It's one thing for this team to lose on a last second field goal in the rain at night in Michigan Stadium and say, you know what, we played a heck of a game. Ian Book threw for 400 yards. Our defense was good. Our offense was really good. We just came up short. But to lose in the manner that they lost, where there was a complete no-show, I don't know how regardless of how well they play the last 5 weeks of the season, that's not going to take away, that's not going to fix what was broken on October 26th up in Ann Arbor.
It was baffling, especially since you saw flashes here and there. Georgia seemed like they were right there at the end, and then to come out like that against Michigan after a bye week, after not having fall classes all week, you're on fall break.
You've got everything working in your
I
favor.
Know.
Michigan's a program that's kind of trying to figure it out, wondering when are we ever going to win a big game. Notre Dame's ranked in the top 10. All they have to do is run the table and then hope for chaos throughout the rest of college football and maybe to get into the playoff for the second straight year. But after that, like, how do you say, all right, now let's wipe it clean and we're on to Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I don't really think Notre Dame's coaching staff, at least Brian Kelly, was able to provide pointed answers. It was just kind of a, I don't know what happened kind of thing.
Even in Brian Kelly's Monday press conference, okay, he meets the media on Monday morning or Monday afternoon for about 30 minutes, no more than 30 minutes, sometimes a little less than 30 minutes. And the first, I don't know, three or four or five, six questions that he got were about Michigan. And finally, Michigan question is being asked, he's like, look, are we ever going to move on to Virginia Tech? This is the last question that I'm taking about Michigan. But the questions that he has been asked, the questions that the players have been asked, there still has not been one concrete answer as to why what happened last Saturday. Like the players really haven't, the players are like, oh, well, we're moving on. It's Virginia Tech. We've put that game behind us. At some point, you have to say, wait a minute, what happened? And how did that happen? I was not at player access on Tuesday because I had a men's basketball game that night. But watching the videos from the four players that were made available, oh, by the way, two of those players were also made available, Alohi Gilman and Robert Hainsey, after the game Saturday in Michigan. So really, we had two players made available to us, Cole Kmet and Julian Okwara, this week. And watching the videos
Ian Book
after Saturday, no Ian Book this week. I doubt we'll get Ian Book on Saturday, but watching the videos from those four players on Tuesday night, they didn't come up with any answers, like it was, hey, we're just moving forward. I don't know how you can move forward without still looking at what the heck happened.
It's confusing. I mean, we even asked, without the cameras on, because we do an off-camera portion of the availability, Alohi Gilman was saying that, maybe they weren't paying attention to details. Maybe they weren't focused. Maybe they weren't handling the week right. But then we asked Julian Okwara if that was the case, and he's like, I don't think that was the case.
He's not going to say anything.
But it's just confusing because there's not one answer. I think the way Ian Book played, yes, it's surprising, but it's not that crazy considering his regression, the weather, Michigan's defense. What was surprising was how the offensive line and defensive line played.
Right.
Because the offensive line, I mean, it's had its warts at times, but it was number one, nationally by Pro Football Focus in pass blocking. It had had games where, particularly the USC game, where they were rushing for 300 yards. And then the defensive line is the deepest and most veteran-led and one of the best units on Notre Dame's team, and they got pushed around. And that was the big surprise to me, is how the Lions played.
So Clark Lee, the shine is off Clark Lee as far as being a Broyles finalist. And, you know, we've talked about Clark Lee the last couple of weeks on the show. Oh, is it good? And, okay, that's done, because they gave up 45 points to Michigan. But the offensive line, too, we don't know how much of a factor it was in losing Tony Jones. Like, there was never any report given in the press box at Michigan Stadium that Tony Jones would not return from rib. Brian Kelly goes the hockey route earlier this week and says it's an upper body injury, but nobody said that Tony Jones would not be available. I don't think he played much, if at all, in the second half. Tyler James, our ND Insider colleague Tyler James, heard at halftime from the Michigan radio feed, while Tyler James is in the men's room at Michigan Stadium, off the Michigan radio feed, that Michigan radio was reporting Tony Jones was just seen leaving the X-ray room with some sort of injury. That's how we found out that. But not having Tony Jones, Jafar Armstrong still not yet 100%. I think he's going to have to be this week. Who else was going to run the ball if you didn't have Jafar Armstrong or Tony Jones available?
I mean, you would have thought that Armstrong would be good to go last week. I mean, he played against USC. He had the bye week. He had all this time off. They were putting in Jameer Smith. They were not giving him a heavy dose of the workload, and that was a shock to me. And I'm really in believe it when I see it mode with Jafar Armstrong at this point. But if
he's
Tony
your,
Jones,
he was your guy. He was the top storyline for USC.
Yep.
And it was even Brian Kelly said, yeah, he's really only played one game, like the USC game. He said he was just getting his feet wet. Ooh, but he was going to be featured. Remember, he was going to be featured big time against Michigan. What do you have, 3 carries for 3 yards?
And before USC, they were talking about his progress and how he'd been showing up. So, you know, maybe we were misled. But, yeah, I their running game has got to put some pressure off Ian Book. And then Ian Book, I mean, I think Notre Dame fans are really going to hold him under a microscope. They already have. But these next 5 games, he's going to be facing defenses that are not as good as Michigan or Clemson. And he really has to show up in every single one of these games, show consistency. The biggest struggles early on this season for him were kind of pocket presence and avoiding the pocket. But what showed up to me against Michigan was his anticipation and his confidence. There were times where he had a guy wide open if he just anticipated
his
the route.
Field awareness. Like,
yeah.
Instead of looking only to the right, take a quick look to the left. Ooh,
yeah.
Might be something open over there.
He seemed like a one-read quarterback to me. I mean, he would, if a read wasn't there, he'd go evade the pocket or he'd give up on the play. He just has to have that confidence. And it's crazy that has happened. It's made me wonder, well, you know, all this talk in the offseason about making Ian Book this new and improved quarterback, making him push himself, be more aggressive with his deep ball. Was Notre Dame trying to fit a square peg in a round hole? Like, were they trying to make him something and he was not?
Maybe. But also, you know how you look back, you look at Brian Kelly, you look at a photo of Brian Kelly now in 2019 and go back and look at a photo of Brian Kelly in 2009. What this job does to you as a head coach, how it ages you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it does the same thing as a player. Like all Ian Book has heard since all he does in his first year as a starter, is goes to the college football playoff, goes undefeated in the regular season. And for a lot of people, that's not good enough. Like they want more. They want Ian Book to throw for 4,000, you know, whatever, just be this prototypical NFL bound type of quarterback, to where maybe he's listening too much to the outside of saying, why can't you do this and why can't you do that and when are you going to do this and when are you going to do that, and maybe that play that toys with Ian Book's psyche to the point where it's paralysis by analysis. Like this is what this job does to a head coach. Maybe this is what this job does at Notre Dame to a starting quarterback, because all everyone cares about at Notre Dame, I don't want to say all, but what a lot of people care about at Notre Dame is not who the starting quarterback is. It's what about that guy next to him? Like, when are we going to see Phil Jurkovec?
Yeah.
Put Phil Jurkovec. Like, people were calling for Phil Jurkovec to be the starting quarterback in the second half of the Louisville game. And I love what Brian Kelly said earlier this week, where he's trying to stay with the company line about the quarterback situation. Ian Book's the guy. Phil Jurkovec's not ready. And finally, Brian Kelly said, look, if there was any chance that Phil Jurkovec could play four plays, if Phil Jurkovec could play five plays and help this Notre Dame football team win a game, then Phil Jurkovec's going in the game. But he said, basically said, guess what? That's not the case. So stop asking. Basically, he's saying, stop asking about Phil Jurkovec because he's not ready.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we really haven't seen that much from Phil Jurkovec in the games that he's played. You think about the first play, he had a Jameis Winston like self sack and falling down
against Michigan.
Yeah,
and there were like 10 writers in our row that all cover Notre Dame, and all of us just kind of looked at each other. Oh, look, there you go.
Yeah.
You want Phil Jurkovec? This is what you're getting from Phil Jurkovec. Now again, it's the weather. It's an unfair situation.
Yeah,
like,
and I think he can get there. It's just at this stage. At this very moment, he is not better than Ian Book.
He's not.
And look, maybe if Ian Book is broken, like if in the next few games, if he really can't get it together, maybe you make a change. But at this very moment, you don't, because Ian Book has done enough. He's still, what, 17-3 as a starter? He is still, I think, 18-3, actually. And so, look, you can't get rid of a guy after the success that he's had, and I think they still believe that he can get to that next level. These next five games are set up to benefit him, but if he can't get it together, then maybe you're talking about an open competition in the offseason.
And can you imagine what the crowd reaction is going to be like, the collective groan that's going to fall over Notre Dame Stadium if Notre Dame gets the ball on Saturday to start? And they go 3-and-out.
Like, will there be boos?
Oh yeah, I would think there would be a lot of boos. And then that's just then is Ian Book in the tank the rest of that game? Like,
yeah.
What happens? What happens if this offense goes 3-and-out? Now again, they may get Jafar Armstrong back, but they're going to lose Tommy Kramer, the starting right guard, for 4 to 6 weeks. With a knee injury. So now you're putting Trevor Ruland in as a starter. You might see Josh Lugg as the backup. Brian Kelly was very pleased with what Trevor Ruland was able to do in an emergency situation the other day against Michigan and Ann Arbor. But now you're playing with a patchwork offensive line, with a patchwork running back situation, with a wide receiver core down Michael Young. He's gone. He's in a transfer portal. And with a quarterback in Ian Book who's, it's a little shaky.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Saturday may not be an easy one.
This game is difficult to predict because Virginia Tech's defense, they're not a good defense. They give up a lot of yards, give up a lot of points, but they get to the quarterback effectively. Last three games, 15 sacks, 22 tackles for a loss. They get to the quarterback. So if they're able to pressure Ian Book all night long, you know, pressure is something that he hasn't been able to handle this season in the pocket and with his reads. So he's got to be able to handle that with a depleted offense.
Quick passing game.
Quick passing game.
Chip Long, hello. Let's dial up some quick looks for Ian Book. Get the ball out of his hands. Don't make him have to go back into the pocket. And number one, fight any type of pressure that's coming. And number two, have to survey the field to find an open receiver. Quick shots to Cole Kmet, quick shots to Chase Claypool, the shovel passes to Avery Davis. Get the ball out of Ian Book's hands and put it in the hands of some other playmakers, because this defense, they're going to get to the quarterback, but right now they're allowing 29.6 points per game. They're ranked 11th in the 14-team ACC for overall defense. They're ranked 8th in the ACC for yards allowed. They're giving up 396 yards a game. So it's people might get so caught up in Bud Foster, just like last week with Don Brown. Don Brown's defense was pretty good, but this Bud Foster defense is not a typical Bud Foster defense. there are plays to be made, go make them.
Well, one thing that Michigan did so effectively last week is how they bracketed Cole Kmet in coverage. That really seemed to be one of the big problems for Ian Book, because he likes to dump it down to that security blanket. He likes throwing it to Claypool, but they made it really difficult putting their best corner on Claypool, doubling Kmet. Will we see that from Virginia Tech this Saturday?
Probably. Cole Kmet. It worked last week.
Yeah, and if they're able to do that, dial up pressure, I think for this game to be a 17.5 spread, I think Notre Dame is capable of winning by more than 17.5, but right now I would choose the opposite, because I just think that the formula here and where Virginia Tech is at, winning three straight games, where Notre Dame is at after that Michigan loss, I feel like we're looking at a close one in this one.
Okay, before we get to predictions, today's Thursday, it's Halloween. Great Halloween weather in South Bend right now. We walked into the building here at downtown South Bend, and I think it's 41 degrees, it's windy, it's raining, it's ugly. It's trick-or-treat time. What do you have for trick-or-treat? We're going from hot take, cold take to trick-or-treat.
Trick-or-treat. And this is
Carter's new segment of the week.
My new segment.
Trick-or-treat, baby.
I love mixing it up. This one's probably easier to follow than the previous segment. Trick.
Just when I got the previous segment down,
yeah,
you scrapped it.
I know. Trick's got a negative connotation.
Okay, let me get this.
Treat. You want to have
good.
A treat. That's a good thing. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
You're going to say if it's a trick or treat.
Got it, I think.
Ian Book will not improve this season. He'll still be the same quarterback that we've seen.
Trick, I don't agree. Right? Am I doing that right?
That is right.
That's not a treat. I think he's going to get better. It's because we've seen it. I just think he's got to get out of his own head, go back and just play instinctual football and just not think about everything that's going on so much. So I'm going with a trick on that one.
I'm going with the trick as well. Schedule plays out well for him. I think the support that Brian Kelly, his teammate, you saw Chase Claypool tweet out a Teddy Roosevelt quote supporting Ian Book.
Wow, we're going deep
last
with that.
Night. Yeah.
Deep with Teddy Roosevelt.
I think he's got the support, and I think this game can give him that confidence back. All right, trick or treat. Jafar Armstrong will be the leading back in this game.
Until we've seen Jafar Armstrong do anything, I'm going trick, because we've waited for Jafar Armstrong now for the last 2 weeks. Like, this is the Jafar Armstrong we're going to see. Didn't happen against USC. This is the Jafar Armstrong we're going to see against Michigan. Big part of the game plan, we were told. Didn't see that. I don't know what's going to be different about Jafar Armstrong on Saturday, and until he can carry the ball and gain 85 yards in a football game, mm-hmm. He's on the back burner right now.
For the listeners that enjoy fantasy football, Jafar Armstrong's the Chase Edmonds of college football, because you never know what you're going to get. Is he available?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Is he going to be? Yeah. I know
right
you made that connection. Well, Armstrong, I'm going to go with treat, because I think rib injuries are really, really difficult to kind of have a handle on. It can affect your breathing. I don't think Jameer Smith is going to lead this team in carries. So I'm going to go Armstrong, but my confidence level with that, it's somewhat of a treat. All right, trick or treat. Navy will be the toughest opponent left on the schedule.
Treat, I'll take that, because just the style of play and everybody, that's all Notre Dame talks about when it's Navy week. Like, ooh, we're playing Navy. Ooh, we got to watch out for that. That almost gets in their heads as well. And I don't expect Duke to offer much of an atmosphere, even though that's at night. Ugh. Another all-nighter for us in the South Bend Tribune that night. And Boston College, no. Stanford, that game may well kick off at 3:30 Eastern time the way we're headed. So I'd say Navy would be it, because it's always a struggle for four quarters when you're playing Navy. And I don't expect this year to be any exception.
I'm going treat. Navy's always a weird game. They've looked so much better this year as opposed to last year. They're the number one best rushing offense in college football. Notre Dame struggled against the run, so I think they'll have some success against Notre Dame. And leading into the next question, Notre Dame loses one more game this regular season, trick or treat?
Trick. I don't think they're losing. But I didn't think they were going to lose in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
So, look, after what we, like we said earlier, after what we didn't see in Ann Arbor, all bets are off with this football team. They could go 5-0. They could go 4-1. Could they go 3-2? Who knows? Like, who expected that effort that we saw in Ann Arbor to produce itself? Like, I have no idea what we're gonna see Saturday, what we're gonna see a week from Saturday, what we're gonna see later on next month in Palo Alto at the regular season finale. You have no clue for a team that had so much to play for and not show up. Who's to say they don't show up again? They don't take it seriously. They don't work their traits. They don't have the grit. You have no idea.
I'm going with trick. I think the Navy game will be a nail biter. That's my thought. But I think they'll mow through the schedule for the most part. And then a couple more. Virginia Tech scores more than 20 points this Saturday.
Trick.
Not seeing it. I'm going with treat.
Wow, look at you. Shootout. Shootout at cold and windy and blustery Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday.
I think they can run the ball well. Last three games, they've averaged 210 rushing yards, 40 points a game these last three games. I just think
one of which was against Rhode Island. Let's throw that out there.
Correct. But they're coming off a bye week. They're coming out inspired. Notre Dame is going to probably have a hangover from that Michigan game. I think they can find a way to score a hair over 20 points. And then my last one, Halloween related.
It has to be. It better be. I'd be disappointed if it wasn't.
Halloween, the movie, is the best Halloween movie there is.
I'll take that. Yes, it's a treat.
Well, you're my favorite co-host now.
There you go.
Halloween.
So we agree?
Michael Myers. Incredible villain. I loved the movie last year. My dad likes to dress up as Michael Myers every Halloween, so I'm a little scarred.
The original Halloween?
The original, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
With Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
Set in fictional Haddonfield, Illinois.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you watch the movie from last year?
No.
The new one?
No. I refuse to watch any remakes of anything.
Usually those are horrible.
They're
but
not good.
That was good.
No.
I promise you.
Not having it.
Predictions.
Wait, before we get to predictions, what are you handing out for Halloween candy? What's your go-to Halloween candy?
Oh, man.
Because I got Tootsie Rolls, Twix Bars, Starbursts. Anything with peanuts in it,
yeah.
I'm throwing back at you. You're probably handing out candy corn.
So mine to hand out or to receive?
Both.
Well,
there are no rules in this show.
If I'm handing them out, I'm going
to
be lazy.
Except the watch of language.
I'm going to be lazy with how I hand it out. I'm going to buy the variety packs. I don't care if Babe Ruth's are in there. Those are gross.
Those are awful.
If they're in there, you know, hey, it's a variety pack. It's cheaper. But if I'm getting the Halloween candy, I want something interesting and outside the box because you're going to get the same thing. You'll cycle through 46 packages of M&Ms. So if I can get Sour Patch Kids or like one of those caramel popcorn ball things,
ooh,
that's cool. But the worst people are the ones that give away mints or toothpastes. I have no respect for those people.
You know what? My daughter turns 13 tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
You know what my daughter brought home in her trick-or-treat bag, I think maybe 2 years ago?
Huh.
A can of Mountain Dew.
Wow.
What in the world is that? What parent is giving away full cans of Mountain Dew to middle schoolers?
They should be thrown in jail.
They should. So.
Wow.
So we're done?
With predictions. After
predictions. We got predictions.
We do.
Okay. I'm going to keep this short. Notre Dame 31-17.
Notre Dame 34.
Shootout.
Virginia Tech 24.
Ooh, fireworks.
Yep.
31-17, 34-24.
Yep.
All right. That'll do it for the Pot of Gold Extra Point Virginia Tech edition. We are brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast. and brought to you by Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be.